Hi, my name's Laura. I work for Youth for Christ, who are based in Birmingham, and we are about seeing young people's lives changed by Jesus. We are about young people who don't know Jesus coming to know Jesus for the first time, and about you guys who are Christians sharing Jesus with your friends. I get to hang out with some amazing people at Youth for Christ and have a lot of fun. I live just outside of Birmingham. Some small whoops for Birmingham. Birmingham's good. And I live there with my husband. Is Andy, are you in here? Oh, fine. Remember that. He might be in later. I'll boo him when he comes in. And my dog. My dog's amazing. I live with my dog, Archie. He's a total legend. And we're going to have some fun. So, this session is entitled Life According to Love Island. We are going to be looking at sex and relationships a little bit. And in this, I think what I hope, my hope for this session, is that we look at sex and relationships with culture, specifically Love Island in one hand, and the Bible in the other. Dating can be really difficult. Sex and relationships can be really, really tough to navigate, partly because things have changed so much. Even for when we're like, I mean, I'm getting a bit old now, but like, even from when I was going out with people, things have changed massively. I listened to this like interview the other day that said now more people meet their partners digitally than they do through friends. So like more people like get into relationships through being online than they do through actually having relationship for another person. Just the way that people do relationships is completely transforming. And so it's really important that we get our head around what it means to have healthy relationships, positive relationships, relationships that are really pleasing to Jesus, as all this stuff begins to shift and change. Because if we don't have our head straight on some of this stuff, then what will happen is that we will just flex and bend and change along with culture, along with how things are done. So we need to learn some truths, and we need to learn how to apply them. And I am hoping what will be nice is if we manage to do that with Love Island. You see, culture is one thing, this thing that shifts and changes and is constantly telling you that you should be doing certain things in certain ways with certain people. And yet on the other side, we have the Bible, complete truth that tells you who you are, what you're about, how you were created, the way that you are best designed, the way that you were created to be and created to function. And we have these two things, which are really, really difficult because when the Bible was written, dating wasn't a thing. Like, it just wasn't a thing. At the time when the Bible was written, the way that people got into relationships is that your parents picked who you were going to marry. Imagine, right? Imagine if your parents got to pick who you date. Ooh, wouldn't that be fun? But that's how it worked. They'd be like, yeah, they're good. You can go with them. And people will get married that way. And so there's this biblical truth that we need to learn how to apply. But even the concept of relationships looked so different at the time of Jesus. So how do we get these things to work together? I guess one question is, how do we navigate sex and relationships as a follower of Jesus today? That is one question that we could ask. However, that is not the question that I want to ask, because I actually believe that that could well be the wrong starting point. I think a much better question to ask is, what is God's dream for your future? What is God's dream for your future marriage, or your future singleness? And that is our starting point. You see, if we begin to understand the truth of what God has for you in, I don't know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years' time, and we begin there, that's where we start, and we work backwards from that point, things begin to look different. When we begin to know, okay, God has this kind of relationship or this kind of singleness ruled up, like measured up for me. This is the kind of relationship that God would want me to be in, or this is the kind of singleness that God wants me to have, then everything begins to work backwards from that. And so these smaller questions, which seem quite significant in the immediate, questions around sending nudes, or can I technically touch them there, or should I date a Christian? All of these questions begin to look very different when you know where your endpoint is, when you know where you're heading. Does that make sense? If you think of it like a sat nav, right, and you know that the place that you want to go to is, I'm going to say Liverpool because Liverpool's strong. Yay, Liverpool! There's a lot more enthusiasm for Liverpool than Birmingham. Start with Liverpool, and you know that you want to go to Liverpool, then you know the direction you're heading in. You're not going to start unless you live north of Liverpool. If you live in Birmingham, you're not going to start heading south to go to Liverpool. If you know what your destination is, you kind of know the direction that you're heading in, and that is your measuring stick. If I live in Birmingham and want to go to Liverpool, I don't go, oh, right, I head south then. No. Because that doesn't make sense. That's not where I'm aiming for. So I guess some of what we're talking about as we think about this whole Love Island thing is, what is the general direction? What is the big picture? What is the destination point that God wants you to get to? And then how do all of these other things underneath that measure up to getting to the destination that God wants you to be in? So this today is not about finding the right person for now. If you have come here knowing that someone fit is coming here and hoping that there is going to be some sort of coupling thing happening where you get to pick to go out with them, that is not what this is. This is, there was audible disappointment to my left. I'm really sorry. Feel free. Some people are actually getting up and leaving. That is not what this is. This is not about you finding God's, not about you finding the right person now. This is about you becoming God's person for eternity. This is big picture, but we are hopefully going to have a little bit of fun doing it. And we are going to look at Love Island. Now, I'm going to ask you to publicly declare. Could you stand up for me if you're a massive fan of Love Island? There's no shame in it. It's okay. No one's going to boo you. Stand up if you're a massive fan of Love Island. Come on. Come on. Show yourselves. Some people are actually stood there going, oh, this is so embarrassing. Okay. Great. Woo! My gosh, I nearly fell over a speaker. Oh, I nearly died. It's okay. Okay. Brilliant. Brilliant. You guys love Love Island. Sit down. Can you stand... Oh, I'm shouting. Can you stand up if you actively hate Love Island? This is like the worst thing you've ever seen in your whole life. You couldn't even get me to that island and enjoy that sun to be on that program. Okay. That's the second group of people. You guys can sit down. And can you stand up for me if you don't really care either way, but this is a sex and relationship seminar and you thought it might be interesting? Take a stand. Okay. Lovely. Great. Take a seat. It's always good to get a measure of the room, isn't it? It's always good to know. Okay, so we are going to be talking about Love Island a little bit. Not so much that if you don't watch it, then you won't get it. I would also say that if you don't watch Love Island, this is not me endorsing Love Island. I am not saying that what you should do with 8 weeks of your life is make sure you are in every e-living to watch this program. If you don't watch it, don't start. It's fine. Like, you're all right. You're fine as you are. But we are going to be talking about this because the reason is that Love Island is such a massive cultural influence on how, if not you, then your friends will see relationships. And so this is why we're using Love Island as an example. I do not think it is a shining moral example of how we should do life. But it is an influencer, so we're going to talk about it a little bit. Now, could any of the guys that stood up in the first batch who really love Love Island, it's been a long day, could someone do me a favour and try and explain to the rest of the room the premise of Love Island and what it's about? Someone in this room must know how it works. Yeah, thank you. Right, I'm going to come over here. Could you explain to the lovely people in this room how Love Island as a concept works? Okay.
So basically, you have 8 weeks, and in the first week, there's a match-up ceremony, and they pick the person based on looks, and then they couple up with people, and during the weeks, you can swap them out or whatever, and there's a lot of drama, and then breakups, cheating, all that stuff, and then... During, near the end, they're basically trying to get £50,000. And there's these challenges and everything. And then near the end, you come first, second, or third. You can choose to either keep the money or you can split it. And then, yeah.
Great. Lovely. Thank you. A little round of applause there. Well done. Yeah. So, exactly as was said, essentially... 12 people initially spend 8 weeks in a beautiful, what are they called? The places where you stay? Yeah, right. One of them. And they stay there for 8 weeks, there's 12 of them. And more people are added as it goes on. It all gets very dramatic. And there's this kind of coupling that happens. You get with people. And as was said, absolutely brilliantly, the aim of the game is to be in a couple by the end and the final. And you are in with a shot of winning £50,000. And this is kind of how we roll on Love Island. This is kind of how it is. As I say, if you don't watch Love Island, I'm not encouraging you to watch it here. But what I am trying to do is give a bit of a cultural comment on how relationships and sex are kind of done and what's looked at a lot in culture at the moment. And how do we hold that in tension with the Bible? So the way I've gone about this is I've kind of come up with like four rules of Love Island. And we're going to go through these four rules and we're going to chat about them and we're going to have some fun together. And also going to see what the Bible says as well. So rule number one. Coupling is life. So as was previously mentioned, when couples, I did actually have a video clip and I forgot to put it in. I'm really sorry. I would try and act it out for you, but that would just be horrendous for you. But basically, when couples go in initially, they're all lined up and people walk in and you get to pick who you're going to be in a couple with from week one. And as it goes through, the aim of the game is to always be in a couple. The moment that you are not in a couple, the moment that you are single, you cannot remain on the program. You're kicked out. And so every so often during Love Island, during the 8 weeks, people who don't know this are like, oh no. Yeah, that is how it works. As it goes through, there's something called recoupling. And this is where it gets really drama. So there are like a lineup. Sometimes, I think sometimes the boys get to choose, sometimes the girls get to choose. And you basically, it's like picking for a football team, but picking who you're dating. And so you go, right, yeah, I want them. And then they're with you. And then they go, right, I pick them. And then there's always that one person just left at the end who gets kicked out. It's absolutely harrowing. And you can imagine that as different people start to fancy different people throughout the week and throughout the weeks as they go on, this can become really dramatic, really, really drama. But the thing about this, the thing that is really, I do find difficult to see is that in this, being with someone is everything. If you are not in a relationship, you are kicked out. You are kind of thrown to the side. And now I get it. I fully get it. Because if you just had a reality TV show of 8 weeks of everybody being perfectly happy being single and not really wanting to get to know anybody else, it would be really, really dull. So I do understand why they do this. I get it. However, it's a really interesting cultural comment. Because it really says something about singleness. And I'm gonna talk into that in a second. But when people go into Love Island, they go into the villa, often what they will say is that the reason that they have come into the villa is to find love, to find their other half, to find the person that they are meant to be with. I think it probably also has something to do with the £50,000 and getting lots of Instagram followers, but they don't really mention that at the beginning. And so they're all in there to like find their dream partner. And there's this idea, this kind of premise that being in a relationship is their end goal. This is the most important thing. This is what will complete them. This is what life was meant to be about. And that's a really interesting narrative to live by, because I think that narrative is really, really strong in our culture. Can I ask you to stand up if you are in a relationship? Even if it's complicated and it's, well, no, not technically going out. Okay, sure. But if you were like to get off with somebody else, it will be a problem. Do you know what I mean? At this point, someone's just started going out with someone this week and your youth group are just finding out about that. It's really awkward. Okay, great. They're my favourite moments. Okay, lovely. If you are, take a seat, thank you. If you are currently single, could you stand up for me, please?
Way singles!
This is fun. Great. Lovely. A lovely lot of single people. That is my favourite. Wonderful. Great. Brilliant. Okay, you guys can take a seat. And this is a whole room question. Can you stand up for me if you believe that at some level being single is considered a negative thing? If you feel pressure to be in a relationship, could you stand up for me? And that can be if you're in one, that's fine. If you feel like, actually, that it feels like being single is there's something not okay with that. Great. Lovely. Thank you. Thank you for being really honest. I really appreciate that. You guys can sit down. Thank you. You know, it's really fascinating to me as I watch Love Island, this kind of narrative on drive to find the other person and that being your goal. That somehow even if it's okay to be single now, that it's not okay to be single eventually, that you have to be with somebody. I find that interesting because I don't believe actually that all of us were created necessarily to be in relationship. I think, were we created for relationships? Yes. Were we created to be in community, to have people that we are intimate with and get to know and who know us really well in community? Yes, 100%. Were we all made to be in relationships? No, I actually don't think we were. And for some of us, it may well be that we weren't created to date loads, that we were just created to be okay single, and that's all right. But there's this cultural narrative that tells you, do you know, if you're not with someone, either at some point or now, then somehow you are not attractive enough. You are not good enough. And that, for me, is a real struggle. How many people, and this is fine, how many people would say, I believe that there is one person for everyone? That's nice. And how many people would say, nah, it's free for all, you're lucky if it works. No, I don't mean that in like a negative way. Like... good luck to all of you. No, finding someone is a choice. Like, there's not one person for everyone, and you just make it work. Okay, I feel like there are quite a few people who don't know and haven't put their hands up, but that's okay. Thank you so much. Right, I would love to just spend a few minutes talking about where the one thing comes from. Not like the show, the one show, not that. The concept. So it's not a biblical thing. It's actually from something else. Are there two people who know each other fairly well who wouldn't mind demonstrating something for me? I'm not going to ask you to do anything awful. You guys would work perfectly. Would you mind helping me out? Yeah, come. Okay, so the one thing actually comes from Greek mythology. So I need you girls to help me. So Plato said, he's a guy who wrote some stuff ages ago, that we all, humans, used to exist, and I need you to physically try and make this for me, okay? Bear with me, you're doing a really good job. You're wonderful. So every human used to have four legs. So, like, maybe if you stand in front, yeah. So there's like two. So you, if you, yeah. Perfect. And four arms, yeah, good. And two faces, and it's perfect that they're twins. It absolutely works a peach. Now, just stand there for a minute. That'd be great. So the idea is that every human being used to look like this. I keep doing it. You're doing really well. Yeah. Used to look like this. Have four legs, four arms, two faces. Then humans started to get a big for their boots. Like Stormzy. And so what they did was Zeus, who was god at the time, was like, rah, I will make them less powerful. I will split them in half. And then you split. Yeah, great. Well done. You're doing really well. Good improvisation. And so humans split in half, having two legs, two arms, one head each. And this is now what humans look like. And Greek mythology would then say each human was split in half and is doomed to roam the world to find the other half of them. And they will never be complete until they find that other person. Thank you, girls. Take a seat. Round of applause. Let it grow up. Very good at being one person. Twins, perfect. So, that is where this idea of the one comes from. This idea in Greek mythology that humans were originally split in half, and there is someone out there that you must find to complete you. And until you find that one individual, you will never be complete. I need to tell you that the Bible says that you are not completed by having another person in your life. You are never completed through another individual. If you have a real emptiness in you now, being in a relationship will not fill that emptiness. Your stuff and your mess plus their mess does not make one whole person. That makes two people with a whole lot of mess to try and work out together. That is how this operates. And so when we think about this idea of finding your other half, having to be in a relationship, actually what God says is you are enough as you. That you were not created purely to be in a relationship with someone. You were created to be so much more. You see, what happens when we believe this lie, we see it in Love Island all the time, is that people end up in the wrong relationships because they believe that they should be in a relationship with someone. And what then happens is people pair up looking for the one when actually they end up with the wrong person, and then they take on all of that baggage and all of that mess from that relationship that they should never have been in, and then have all this mess that they're carrying into their next relationship with this person who's got all this mess, and the mess just continues and continues, and there's all this stuff. If only they'd have realized that they were enough on their own, that they didn't have to be in a relationship. Yes, we're created for relationship. Yes, we're created for community. But coupling is not everything. You're not out the game if you make a choice to not be with anyone for a season or for a lifetime. Next one. Comparison is key, okay? This is another thing in Love Island that's a really, really big deal. When people go into Love Island, often they're kind of vague. They're like, yeah, I'm kind of looking for someone with a head. They'll pretty much, and this isn't always true, often the girls want someone taller than them. But they're looking for someone, anyone who will kind of fill this void a little bit. And what happens often is they will be coupled with someone and then they'll introduce someone new and incredibly physically attractive into the villa. And all of a sudden, their head's been turned. And this person, compared to the person they're dating, is really hot or just like new. And so what tends to happen is one of them will take the other one to the side. You know, I'm just putting it out there. Like, you don't have to. He's fine if you don't like me, but you should probably know, like, my head's been turned and I think you're amazing. What do you think? Fully knowing that they're actually supposed to be with somebody else. And this is kind of how it works. It's this standard idea of that you will be with someone until someone better comes along. The problem, right, in some of this, and this comes back to this, the one thing, is that there's this belief that because there's the one, that when you find someone who you could be with, that it should just work. If it's meant to be, it will just work. It will be easy. It will be fine. And what happens is that we begin to compare that person to what we think a relationship should be like. And then when things get tough, we get really surprised that we have to choose to love that other person, choose to kind of stay in this relationship and work really hard at it. And this is part of the problem by just not really thinking about what relationships you're in. Because relationships are a choice. They are always a choice. They are often hard work. Marriage, my husband's not in here. Marriage is really hard work. Really hard work. And all of the relationships that we are in up until that point lead us to this one big relationship, if you're called to get married, that you will be in. And so we have to begin to practice making these choices to love people. You know, in Love Island, it's really interesting because often I think comparison is confused with standards. People don't really have... Oh, this sounds awful. This sounds horrendous. I'm sorry for what I'm about to say. People don't really have standards often. That's bad, isn't it? Often they kind of just react to what's in front of them. And unless you've got standards, what are you measuring someone up to? You see, we often just go based on what we feel. If they're hot, if they kind of, yeah, they've got ears, great, I'll date them, that's fine. Box ticked. And we get into these relationships without thinking, actually, what is the relationship? If God is calling me to be in a relationship, if God is calling me to get married, then what kind of person are they going to be like? What am I striving for in that relationship? What is my standard there? Does this person, despite the fact they're only 14, in some way match what that could be like? And you know what? If it doesn't, I just wouldn't bother. It's going to be really hard work in the end, unless you're like the kind of couple that say you're going out, but you never actually speak to each other, so it makes no difference whatsoever. Like, if you're going to really emotionally invest in this relationship and serve in this relationship, go into it with standards and do not confuse comparison with standards. Have a measuring stick. Have one. Think it through, but don't use that to compare other people to each other. I would also say, and I'm going to ask you the measuring stick question in a minute, like, don't take this too seriously, but it is important to have standards. I remember when I was all keen, and I was like 16, I wrote a little list of what I wanted my husband to be like. And I'm married to the most incredible guy. I mean, he is a dream. He is just brilliant. I love him. But he probably fulfills one of my five things that I wanted from one of them. It's so funny. I was like, I want them to be able to speak French. What a stupid thing to write on a list. My husband can barely speak English. I love him. I love him. I love him with my whole heart. But he is not what I wrote down on that list. Because God knows what I need. I think I know what I need, but God really knows what I need. I would love you to turn to the person next to you. If you were going to set a standard, if you were going to say, do you know what? If I think about what has God got for my future, what has God got for my marriage, if you were going to be in a relationship with someone and that was right, what are two or three things that you would say, this has to be there? Now, what I'm going to say is this, and this is really, really important. The error we make is that we get non-negotiables confused with bonus features. If some of you lads are about to turn around and go, oh, they've got massive boobs. Like, no. Bonus features. If you think their boobs are nice, that is a bonus feature. Important, but not a non-negotiable. Speaking French, non-negotiable. Stupid thing to have written down. For me, a non-negotiable, they have to be completely in love with Jesus. That kind of thing. The thing that really, really matters. Not like, oh, yeah, they've got Yeezys, whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, stuff that matters. So, what would two or three things be that is your standard? And we're thinking for the future, not just for now. Could I have just a couple of people, dead quick, that would be prepared to share what some of their, like, standards are, their non-negotiables? Yeah? Yeah? Is that a hand going up? Okay, then. Right, if we could listen up, that'd be lovely.
So, we put as number one, so you need to... They need to trust and believe in Jesus. Number two, we put loyalty. And number three, we put respect.
Lovely. Jesus, loyalty, respect. Fantastic. Aries. Yeah, come on. Let's all clap each other and have a nice time. Yes, nice. There was someone with their hands up in this direction. Yes. Sorry. Thanks. Yeah.
Mine was never cheat. Yeah, another one was never lie.
Yeah.
And like always be honest.
Yeah, lovely. There's a real nice themes there. Loyalty, respect, truth. One more. Coming down here. Yeah, I'm coming to you.
Oh my gosh.
Why would you put your hand up and then be sad that I've picked you? What are you doing? Okay, come on.
To be ambitious, really.
Yeah.
I think that's the main one.
Nice, driven. Rah. Cool. Okay, great. Knowing our standards is really important. It's not that comparison is bad. Comparison to other people isn't great. But comparison to what you believe God is calling you to and for and the purpose of your life. One of mine wasn't ridiculous, was that I wanted the person that I ended up with to be spiritually heading in the same direction as me. Like, if I feel that God's calling me to do this with my life, whatever God is calling them to do with their lives has to be compatible with that thing. So what are some of the standards? What are some of the things that you are really looking out for the end goal, for what you believe God has got for your life and for your future? Okay. Next one. Rule four, bed is the benchmark. Now, I don't know how many of you have seen Love Island. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the bedroom. And for those of you who don't watch it, yes, it's exactly what it looks like. This is a number of double beds lined up in a room. And they all... If you ever think it's a good idea to have sex with someone who's unlike where someone else is like 3 feet away from you, you need to talk to your youth leaders real bad. Like, genuine. It's dirty. Nasty. So, this is how they do the bedroom arrangements. In this program, bed is a benchmark. If you are invited into someone's bed to sleep with them, whether there's sex or not, it kind of makes your relationship official. You know that they've kind of made a claim on a person if they get as far as sharing a bed overnight. Now, I do not agree with this. This is not what my bedroom looks like. You'll be pleased to know. I do not think this is the right way to do the bedroom situation. However, it's really, really interesting that bed is still the benchmark, that there is something significant about having someone share a bed with you. Something significant, some sort of recognition that there is something significant about who you invite to bed and what happens there, that sex is significant. How is sex seen in your friendship group? Like, chat to the person next to you, just dead quick. How do you think sex is seen in your friendship group? Okay. That was just a dead quick one. I'm not sure how you think your friends view sex. We've only got 10 minutes left and I have some stuff to say. So I've not got time to run and ask you. But there's something really interesting happening in terms of sex. Personally, I think sex is amazing. I think it's brilliant. Big fan. But 10 years, it's great. 10 years married. Too much detail. It's probably good my husband isn't here. I think sex is amazing. Sex is a really, really great thing. But what's really interesting culturally is that whilst people are more connected than they ever have been before, whilst people are in contact with more people they could have sex with than they have ever been before, people are having less sex now than they have done for generations. There is something about, I can give you some data, there's some stuff that's come out on this. It's really interesting. And the younger you get, the more, not like too young, but like the people your age, people my age, the younger you get in terms of that, the more it is true. The way that we are doing sex currently as a culture does not work. There is something that is not working with it, and so people aren't having sex. When people are getting married, 50% of marriages now end in divorce, whether they're Christian or not. Something about the way that we are doing sex, something about the way that we are doing relationship isn't working. And so actually, what's beginning to happen is people are beginning to choose not to have sex because they recognize that all sorts of different things are going on. In the space of a generation, sex has gone from something most high school students have experienced to something most haven't. People now in their early 20s are 2.5 times as likely to be abstinent, so not have sex at all, as Gen Xers, which is people in their 40s, were at that age. 15% report having had no sex since they reached adulthood. This whole narrative we have previously been told about sex is not working, because I believe we're not using it in the way that it was meant to be used. You see, I am, as I have said, a big fan of sex. I think sex is amazing. I think sex is incredible. I think sex is powerful. I think sex is dangerous. I think it's created to bond two people. Honestly, I think sex is created for marriage. And I want to tell you why I think that is. We have 5 minutes to the end of the seminar, so I'm just going to leave the last point. We're not going to get there because I really want to talk to you about this. Here's the thing. There's a difference between dating someone and marrying someone. When you date someone, you have a contract with them, right? And so if you think about your phone contract or your internet contract, if someone does something in a contract, the other person can pull out if the other party doesn't fulfill their obligation. So for example, your phone provider cuts off all your data. They shouldn't do that because you've paid for it. You have a right to have that data. So if they let down on their side of the bargain, you can pull out on your end. Does that make sense? That's how a contract relationship works. If you're dating with someone, you're going out with someone, and they cheat on you, you can end that relationship. If you are dating someone and they, throw their McFlurry in your face and you're really annoyed about it, you can break up with them because they have broken their contract when they agreed to go out with you and said, you must not throw McFlurries in my face, all that stuff. When you're going out, you're in a contract relationship. You can pull out of it if the other person doesn't fulfill their end of the bargain. Now, when you marry someone, you are in a covenant relationship, which is very, very different. A contract says, if you do this, I will do this. A covenant says, I will do this even if you do this. You know, I'm in a marriage that is brilliant, but sometimes my husband's a pain in the bum. Sometimes, just sometimes, he's a nightmare. And I don't feel like being nice to him. I don't feel like loving him. Sometimes when he's really hungry, he does my face in. He's really rude, really grumpy. But in those moments, I have to choose to love him. In the moments when things are really tough in my marriage, I choose to love my husband. When I said yes to my husband, I said yes to him and no to everyone and everything else. Why? Because I'm in a covenant relationship with him. That's why when you get married, you say for sickness or in health, for richer, for poorer, even if those things happen, I will choose to stay. And that is tough, because sometimes you will not feel like it. And so what is something that is powerful and dangerous and creates a bond between people in a way that enables you to stay in a covenant relationship even when it's tough? The answer is sex. There's something that happens when you have sex with someone. I don't know whether you have friends. If there's someone in this room, don't look at them. But you have friends that have stayed in relationships much longer than they should have because they've been sleeping with their partner. Because something happens when you have sex with someone that bonds you to them in a covenant sort of way. That says, even if they do this, I will stay with them. And when that comes into a relationship, a kind of boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, what happens is that there's a bond that takes place that really should have only happened for that one relationship that God had created for you if you're going to get married. Now, I think sex is amazing. But what happens when you have sex is that you literally enter a covenant. There's, I'll speak really quick. When you have sex with someone, if anyone in here is really, really young, I'm gonna not go into loads of detail. But basically, when you have sex with someone for the first time, often the female, there's a little bit of blood. And in the Bible, what happens is when you create a covenant with somebody, there is blood that is shed. So if you think about the animal sacrifices that were made in the Bible, blood was shed in order to solidify that covenant. I think it's really interesting that when you get married to someone, you have a covenant relationship with that person. And I believe that sex is designed for marriage. And so when you have sex with someone in a married relationship, there's a little bit of blood the first time that you have sex. It's not too bad. Don't worry about it. It's fine. But I believe that that is there to represent this covenant that is taking place. Now, you might then go, okay, well, can I send someone nudes? Okay, well, technically, what if they touch this bit? For me, it goes back to this question that we asked at the start. What does God have for your future? Not what is right now. What feels really good, like 2 o'clock in the morning when you've both had a bit of a drink and you happen to be laying in the same bed. That is not your benchmark. Your benchmark is what does God have for your future, either your future marriage or your future singleness? And does that act, does that thing, does that message, that image in that moment push you in the direction of what you believe that God has for your future? You see, even when you think about who you're going to date, you think about whether you're, even the little things about who you're going to start flirting with, because once you start flirting with somebody, you're heading down the track. Either that or you get yourself a reputation. When you start doing that sort of thing, you've got to be thinking, what has God got for my future? What has God got for my marriage? Or what has God got for my singleness? And how does me doing this that with that person now lead to that end point? How does that affect that end point? How will it be when I have to sit down with the person I'm going to marry and go through all the stuff I've done? Now, don't get me wrong. There will be plenty of people in this room who have done stuff with people that maybe you're sitting here right now thinking, oh, gosh, I probably shouldn't have put that there or whatever. And, you know, if you're in here and you feel that, then I believe that God can heal all sorts of things. He can restore stuff to you. There'll be some people in this room who have had stuff taken from them that they would not have wanted to give. And I believe that God knows that about you. He does not judge you for that. He does not see you unclean for that. But what I would say is, why don't you spend some time with Jesus asking him to make you new? Because I believe that God has something for each of your futures. And for some of you, that will look like singleness. And for some of you, that will look like marriage. But the decisions that you make today affect your future. Who you date today, who you send that little winky face emoji back to today may well affect all sorts of different things. We take small choices, small steps towards a big future. There was a lot I was going to say today that I haven't managed to. But I want to finish by reading a bit of a book. It's like story time. This is a book that I actually didn't get around to telling the guys to put in the marketplace because I only read it on holiday last week. But this is a really good book. If you are wanting to read some stuff on relationships, it's called Loveology by a guy called John Mark Comer. It's really easy to read. The spacing out is really big and the print's really big too. So you can enjoy that. But the content is really good. So he says this about marriage. But I'm going to exchange the word marriage for a relationship. It says this. Don't get into a relationship because you think he or she is the one. Trust me, they're not. There's no such thing. But do get into a relationship. Do get married when you see who God is making somebody to be and it lights you up. When you want to be a part of that story of transformation, that journey to the future. When you are well aware it will be a long and bumpy ride, but you don't want to miss 1 mile because you believe in God's calling on them and you want in. My wife makes me a better person. She calls out the best in me. She calls me to live up to who I really am and to who God is making me to be. Do you know, if you are in this tent, even outside this tent right now, you are called to so much more than a relationship. That is not the goal of your life. The goal of your life is to fulfill the purpose that God has for you on this planet. And if you get married, it's to help them to do exactly the same thing. It's about putting them first, serving them. In 1 John, we talk about this is what love is, by that God sent his son to die on the cross. It's about sacrifice. It's about giving. The calling on your life, the number one goal, your end game is not to get into a relationship with someone. It's to fulfill God's purpose on your life. And as I said, if you're married, to help them to do the same thing. That is your future. That is your benchmark. And so in all of the things you're looking at now as to who you date, what you send, where you touch, where you don't, all of those things. Know your destination. And so I would really encourage you to maybe spend some time thinking about that and praying about that on your own. Spend some time thinking through, do you know what? What is it that God's got for my future? What's my purpose on this planet? What am I created for? And from that space, begin to work out what healthy, Jesus-centered relationship might look like. I'm really sorry I didn't manage to get through all my content. Maybe I should have spoken quicker. Thank you so much for being in here. If anything's come up in this seminar that is really tough for you, then the chat room is open all week as well. I'd really encourage you to go and talk to those guys. I think you're wonderful. I'm just going to say a quick prayer. Jesus, thank you so much for the guys and girls in this tent. God, I thank you that you have a plan and a future for each of their lives. And God, I pray that you would help their vision, your vision for their life, to be so clear in their mind. That when relationships and people come alongside them that might turn their head, God, if they are not due to be a part of that future, then God, I pray that you would help these guys to be wise and walk on. Jesus, protect their hearts, protect who they are. And God, I pray for the guys in here that are created to be single, that you would give them strength and you would give them community. That for the guys who are in this room and they're going to get married one day, God, I pray for absolutely incredible relationships where we learn to put ourselves second. Protect these guys. Let them know they're loved. And God, I pray that you'll be with them as they go throughout today. Amen. Great. Thank you so much, guys. I know it was hot. You've been wonderful. Amen.